From the land to Grant University on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of February 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason at the I Hotel for the Illinois Soybean Summit today. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets, of course, with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And then we'll be joined by three of the presenters here at the summit to talk about entomology and plant pathology as it's related to the soybean. And as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast too. That with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. And I'll remind you to get your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. That's a bit more than a month away now, but don't wait. Right now at willag.org. The cost is just $40 to get yourself registered. willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.47 and a quarter. It was a penny lower. The May contract down a quarter at $4.58 and a quarter. December contract, $4.79, also down 1 cent. March soybeans at $12.03 and a quarter, 19 lower. The May at $12.13 and three quarters, down 19. And November soybeans, 14 and a quarter lower. That contract settled at $11.85 and a half cents a bushel. The bean meal at $361.70, down $6.60, and the bean oil 42 cents lower at $45.60. Wheat futures soft red up 6 1/4, settled at $6 a penny and a half. The hard red at $6.20 3/4, a penny and a quarter lower. Both of those in the March contracts. Live cattle futures at $183.17 1/2, up $2.47 1/2. The feeders at $244.87 1/2, $4.72 1/2 cents higher. And lean hogs at $83.75, $1.07 1/2 cents lower. Crude oil for the day at $73.79 a barrel, down $2.06. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.71 2/10, 7 2/10 lower. And the wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB, 3 7/10 of a cent lower, $2.19 4/10 of a cent. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net is traveling and moved outside of the cell towers. And so we're talking today with Jim McCormick. He is also with agmarket.net. Hey, Jim, thank you for filling in today. I appreciate that a lot.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you may not so much because we have to talk about the soybeans. A good day yesterday and took it all away today.
Exactly. I think we saw what we saw the last couple of days, Todd. It was a little bit into the month profit taken. Unfortunately, flipped the calendar to February, obviously. Then they came in. There was two headlines that I think that the market focused in on. The first one was the export sales. They were disappointing, only 6 million bushels. That included a large cancellation from an unknown buyer. A lot of people are speculating that unknown was China, but either way, however you slice it, it was a crummy export number for beans. And then on top of it, some of the midday models are increasing the chances of better rain for Argentina. That crop, Todd, is re-experiencing some really extreme heat, 100, 105 degree temperatures as it's getting to that critical grain fill. But if they get that rain, it's going to help stabilize that crop. And the combination of those two wash the bean market out, unfortunately, today.
Will there be follow-through tonight and tomorrow?
Well, I hope not. I mean, technically, Todd, we settled at 12.03 and a quarter. That was right at the USDA report in January. I think there is a little bit of a technical support zone there. We did have that key reversal a couple days ago where we made the contract low, reversed, and closed higher than the previous day's bar. So you did get a technical indication that maybe we're trying to put in a technical bottom. So into the week, you might see a little bit of short covering possibly as maybe a positioning into the weekend. This weather in South America, this rain kind of moves into the map and moves out of the map. So I could see a little bit of short covering. The other thing we're going to keep an eye on is what the funds are doing. The report comes out, obviously, after the close tomorrow, but the funds have been quite short a lot of these grain markets, and a lot of people are looking for that indication. Maybe are they to the point where they've hit that apex of selling and maybe start to cover that position.
If they cover that position, does it mean much for the long term, or is it simply a temporary bounce?
I would argue, unfortunately, it probably will be a temporary bounce for a couple of different reasons. The first one is in the bean complex specifically. We're moving into that South American harvest relatively quick. So that's going to limit it, and we're just not competitively priced with Brazil. There's talk today that China, some of the purchases that China had made for U.S. beans, they actually rolled them out to further deliveries into the springtime. So that's going to be a problem on the beans. And then on the corn, the reality is, by all indications, Todd, the farmer is massively undersold. So I think if we do get a rally in the corn, and the corn market looks like it's under the same kind of a key reversal double bottom pattern. But the fact is, I think any strong rally we get will be met with a lot of producer selling who needs to generate cash flow as we go into the springtime.
As they do that, will there be opportunities later in the year? I suppose that might be weather driven, but given a normal growing season here, and probably a fairly normal one in Brazil, well, I don't know whether that will be the case, but if it's normal, what happens?
Well, I think you will get rallies, Todd. I mean, we're going to debate acres. I think less corn acres are going to be debated because of the cost of production. The safrinha crop hasn't been planted. We got to get through our spring, our weather pattern, safrinha crop pattern. So I do think you will get weather-driven bounces. But overarchingly, this market is trending lower because the supplies are building, not just here, but building in South America at this point, quicker than demand is bouncing back. So that overarching says rallies throughout the spring into the summertime, unless we just have a weather pattern that we're just not seeing, you need to take advantage of it and sell with the anticipation prices will more likely be a lot lower into the fall than they will be in the spring and summer.
And so you're advocating selling both crops, old and new, at the same time?
Old and new at the same time right now, Todd, because the reality is you're looking at stocks used somewhere around 15%. If we plant 91, 92 million acres of corn, have anywhere close to a trend line yield, you're looking at about a 15 billion plus production. Demand this year is 14.5. So unless we can find 500 million more bushels of demand, your carryout's going to grow even more. That would argue corn is probably going to go below 4, maybe down to 375, worst case, maybe 350. So, that's kind of the parameters we're looking at. So unless we really don't plant a lot of corn or the yields just aren't there, the history says we're going lower because we just essentially are building the stocks quicker than we're using them.
Hey, thanks much, Jim.
Thank you.
That's Jim McCormick. He is with AgMarket.net. Well, as you know, I'm at the Illinois Soybean Summit here at the iHotel today, and there are a series of presentations being made by University of Illinois affiliated or actually employed folks, including Nick Sider, who's an extension entomologist here. Robert Bellum is with us. He's with Brazzi Farms, but was with University of Illinois Extension, and a former University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist, now working with the University of Kentucky. Carl Bradley joins us as well. Let's start with the entomology side. What kinds of things are you talking to the soybean producers that they'll need to be watching in their fields, and why, Nick Sider?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of insects that we saw this last year. Fairly common insects to see, the green clover worm and the bean leaf beetle. Green clover worm, really the news with it last year had more to do with the moths than the injury that they caused. We saw little black moths all over everything throughout the state in the fall. And that was this particular insect pest. It can be an issue in the field from time to time, but it's usually sort of a minor pest, sort of a non-factor. But we'll talk a little bit about the impacts of that insect, what impacts there are. Probably a little more time on bean leaf cysts that we see a little more consistent.
But to put that in some historical context, I would think about the Asian soybean aphid, I think, when it first came in. And that really had farmers had issues with it, especially in the northern part of the state, in Wisconsin and other places. It's moved further southward into the state as well. And it probably caused farmers some concern to see so many moths that they did not recognize in their field, and your job is to figure out whether that's going to be a problem in the future.
Yeah, that's right. And with that insect, most of them for us are migrants. Most of them are coming in from the south. We don't expect that it's going to have we can't really predict how many green clover worm we'll see next year from that. Also an insect that's very susceptible to diseases and parasitoids. So they often go through these boom and bust sort of cycles where you have high populations and then they just kind of crash. 2 years ago, I barely saw a green clover worm all year long.
Bean leaf beetle, a different insect, probably worrying about that early in the season, springtime, those first planted soybeans. What will you be telling producers today?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because it's the first and the last soybean pests that we see. And we see defoliation from that, especially, like you said, early in the season. Usually that's kind of a cosmetic issue for us. It doesn't usually amount to much in terms of yield loss. Where we get into some problems with bean leaf beetle is at the end of the season, they feed on the foliage, which occasionally is a problem for us, but they also scar the pods, which can lead to some quality issues if populations are high.
Are there anything else that you'll be discussing today or that producers need to be aware of, whether that's on soybean or corn?
Yeah, I'll probably talk about the soybean gall midge a little bit, but just the fact that we don't have that particular insect. It's been a problem out west. We've been looking for it here. We don't have it. We're glad we don't have it.
Finally, do producers often ask, when I put a fungicide on, they always want me to use an insecticide as well? Should they, if they can avoid using the insecticide?
If they can avoid it for the most part. What we find with our insecticides, they do a really good job of killing whatever's in the field at that time. Usually for us at R3, that's not damaging populations of insects. A lot of people will try to do this for preventative control with insects. The problem is they only last about 5 to 7 days, these insecticides. So if you're preventing something, it really has to show up in the next 5 to 7 days for that to be effective.
Nick Sider, of course, is a field crops entomologist for University of Illinois Extension. He's making a presentation at the Illinois Soybean Summit during the afternoon hours. So is Carl Bradley, plant pathologist from the University of Kentucky, former plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Tell me, Carl, what you'll be talking about and how that differs across the state. Robert Bellum is here as well with Rossi Farm, so we'll get his take on these issues.
Sure, yeah, I'm on a panel, and Robert is also on the panel with me on red crown rot of soybean. And so that's a relatively new disease of soybean in Illinois. It was first found in 2017 and then I guess officially reported in 2018. But we didn't find it in Kentucky until 2021. And so we have it in Graves County, which is southwestern part of the state. And it's been hanging out there for the last couple of years. We found it in a new county last year, Callaway County, which is right next to Graves County. So we've been able to do some research in the field with red crown rot, actually pairing up with University of Illinois, where these trials with both universities being involved are actually at the U of I Orr Center in Western Illinois. So we've had a chance to look at some things like seed treatment and some planting date, different planting date timings, and just trying to look at some field management of this new disease.
Robert, why is this disease a problem? What issues does it cause?
It's very similar to sudden death syndrome in the fact that the infection occurs soon after planting, but the damage doesn't show up until basically the reproductive stages, say late R3, early R4. The foliar symptomology looks identical to sudden death syndrome. You can't differentiate them just standing in the field looking down at them, but it causes more of a root rot and crown rot. When plants are infected very early at high levels, they simply die and they're non-productive. Plants that are maybe infected a little bit later will produce some seed that can have some very severe impacts on yield.
There are some variations geographically from north to south in Illinois all the way through Kentucky. Can you tell me about the issues that the upper two-thirds, I suppose, of Illinois might see and where those show up or whatever division you have?
Well, currently, I don't know, there's some argument about how widely distributed it is in Illinois. I think what Carl has done some mapping that may be up to 18 counties where we've identified it. The two sort of hot spots seems to be sort of in that Madison, Bond County area in the southwestern part of the state, and then up again Pike County over on the west. Now, whether or not it's more severe there or if we've just been looking for it more there, we don't know at this point. So a lot of our efforts are to increase awareness in the part of agronomists and farmers to be looking for it, to identify it properly, and then to start to evaluate what kind of yield impacts it may be having.
Is this a crop rotation issue? Is it related to some practice that producers do? And how do they identify it?
Yeah, so, well, as Robert said, it looks almost exactly like sudden death syndrome out in the field as far as the foliar symptoms. If I would say at this point in time, if they're seeing symptoms like that, be sure that you're looking at the root and lower stem area as well, so you can look for that reddish discoloration. The fungus will produce these structures called parathecia. They're roundish, kind of spherical structures that are kind of reddish orange in color. They're going to show up on the lower stem and roots, but they're not always there. Sometimes you'll see them and they'll disappear. So it can be difficult to identify. But if you're very suspicious about things, it's important to get those samples submitted to your diagnostic lab. Of course, here in Illinois, that would be the U of I Plant Clinic. So, yeah, number one is figuring out what you got there.
After you've figured out what you've got there, is there a treatment? Are there things that you need to do? Are there counts that have to be made? When do you come in and do salvage? What happens?
Yeah, so we're still trying to work a lot of this out on management. A lot of unknowns right now, for sure. I would think, you know, the things that are important are crop rotation still needs to be in play. This pathogen can survive in the soil. It's soil-borne, lives in the soil, so it can live there for a bit. But keeping those crop rotations in place is important. If you went to continuous soybean, it would just make things a lot worse. They're the only thing that's actually labeled for management is a seed treatment called Saltro. We have seen in our trials, we have seen some efficacy. It's not a silver bullet, but it does provide some suppression, and that's what it's labeled for, is suppression. So that's the only currently registered tool that we have. Cleaning off equipment, I think, is also important. I know that's hard to do, but if you know you have it in a field, it's going to spread with equipment. So if you have the ability to clean off that equipment, that's at least going to maybe hopefully slow it down from spreading. But it is a little bit of a mystery on why we just are seeing this suddenly within the last few years and showing up in new places. There's just a lot to learn about the biology of this pathogen that we haven't really had a chance to really dig into yet.
Do we have an idea? Did it come from the Southwest? And is it changing as the climate changes? Or are there other things you're looking at?
Yeah, we don't have any solid answers. We have hypotheses on maybe why it's shown up. I mean, it's possible maybe it's been there in hiding for a while, and now we have conditions that are just more favorable for it, possibly. Or maybe it was introduced in some fashion, and it's just kind of spread from there. But we don't have those answers right now.
Robert, experience from last summer, the drier areas, or was it after the really heavy rainfalls?
You know, Todd, I don't know that rainfall matters a lot. This seems to be a disease that will infect under relatively dry conditions and under relatively warm soil conditions. We're sort of the knowledge phase now where we were with sudden death syndrome or soybean cyst nematode 40 years ago. We're just starting out on the ground floor. We don't know the extent of the disease. We don't have good current research on management of the disease yet.
I take it then from both of you, the most likely answer for the farmer is look for it, tell me about it, so that we can study it. Is that right?
That's very true. Research takes money. Money follows awareness. So until we know the extent of the disease and how serious it is, the money's not going to be available to fund the research that needs to be done. So I've got to compliment the Illinois Soybean Association. They've done a good job of raising awareness of the presence of the disease and getting guys to look at it, look for it.
Thank you much. That's Robert Bellum. He is with Brazzi Farms, along with Carl Bradley, who's with the University of Kentucky. He's their plant pathologist. We're, of course, here at the Illinois Soybean Summit in Champaign. Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather, that's tstorm.net online, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the world of agricultural climate in the global regions. Let's begin, Mike, in Argentina. Thank you, by the way, for being with us. They're going to have a little heat. Can you tell me about the prospects?
Well, the heat wave started a few days ago, and it's going to last for about 10 more days. High temperatures yesterday were in the mid-90s to low 100s, and we'll see similar or even warmer temperatures over the next 10 days. So that will be a factor for late corn development and also soybeans. It will also be fairly dry. Argentina is in an interesting situation because it had been very wet up until about mid-January, and then rain shut down about 16 days ago, and there's very little rain in the forecast over the next week. Once we get beyond then, there will be some storms, and we'll need to see those verify because soybeans are moving into their key period of development, and so is late-planted corn, and that's the majority of their corn crop. So weather is pretty important right now. It's not very favorable at the moment, but there are some signs of improvement ahead, and that'll be the key thing to watch over the next week.
Moving northward then, what does Brazil look like?
Well, Brazil's also drying out in the southern growing areas. They haven't seen a ton of rain lately, though it's not been unusually dry, but they would like to see some more. That's also extending into parts of Paraguay. Now, even though they don't have a lot of rain on the near-term horizon, it won't be nearly as hot as it is in Argentina, and that's because surface-level high pressure in the Atlantic Ocean will keep temperatures a little bit cooler there. Once we get about a week out, there are better rain prospects because either a front will drive northward from Argentina or a different one will sink southward from central Brazil, and those should converge somewhere near southern Brazil and Paraguay and bring some okay rains to those areas around 7 to 10 days from now. Again, that also needs to verify because even though they're not in a situation where it's been very dry, it has been drying and they need some more rain to keep prospects up.
Can you do one more thing before we go for me? That would be to take a look at the growing regions where wheat is across the planet. It's always and every month being grown. What are prospects for it?
Well, across the northern hemisphere, it's probably about as ideal as it can get. If you look at the United States, almost all of the crop in the central U.S. was near or wetter than normal over the last 90 days. And the same is true of wheat in the European Union, wheat in Ukraine, wheat in Russia. Even China's getting in on some of the action right now because they're seeing a pretty decent rain right now and over the next few days. And that is a little unusual because they're typically very dry in the winter. Even parts of India are getting rain, and they're also usually pretty dry in the winter. And so once you add all of this up and then you look at the forecast going forward, which is for at least two more significant rains through mid-month in the U.S. and at least a couple more rains across the European Union, Ukraine and Russia, where again, all those areas are doing pretty fantastic. You have to really start thinking about what's it going to look like a couple of months from now. If we just get a few more rains over the next 2 to 3 months after this ends, it's going to be very difficult to have poor crops in any of these areas. Now, we never want to out-forecast the weather because you never know what it's going to be like 2 months from now. But as of today, it looks pretty ideal, and we don't need to have a super wet setup going forward to maintain these crops.
Hey, Mike, thank you.
Yep, thanks. Great having me here, Todd.
Yeah, that is Mike Tenere. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. We're coming to you today from the Illinois Soybean Summit at the iHotel here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You've, of course, been listening to the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org.